both of those verses refer to Jesus' baptism of brothers. When people in the synagogue in Nazareth say that they knew Jesus, the brother of James, Joseph, Judas, and Simon. These verses then indicate that Jude, the author of the epistle, was one of Jesus' brothers. It's worth remembering, or being aware, but not if you don't already know, that at one time, even Jesus' brothers didn't believe who he really was. That's something mentioned in John 7, verse 5. But now Jude has come to believe in the true identity of Jesus and is content to describe himself as Jesus' servant. It's an example of the change which needs to take place in the hearts of many, indeed some of us. It's possible that at some level we can have an acquaintanceship with Jesus, but not really believe in who he is or serve him. Jude is writing to Christians. The latter part of verse 1 indicates that they are those whom God has called them, and God whom he set his love, and whom Jesus keeps to be his own. And what emerges from verses 2 and 3 is Jude's concern for them. He wants good to come to them, and mercy, peace, and love being multiplied, being theirs in abundance. And verse 3 shows a willingness to address an issue which they needed to face. It might be very easier for them to sidestep. And there's a prompt, perhaps, to consider what we want for other believers. And whether we're willing to speak about what living as a Christian really means, both in terms of what we're to follow and in what works to exist. Some years ago, I had a card from a friend in another country. We exchanged Christmas cards once a year. And he had a rather subtle phrase in it. I'm more friends with the husband really than the wife. And he said, "We only want what is good for you." I didn't know quite why he wrote it, but it rather touched me, and it's remained with me as a thought in my own relationship with others. That's something that I want for other people, including those within the church, perhaps especially those within the church. Jude wants to draw attention to is to believe for the readers to contend for the faith, the body of the truth which has been passed on to the church, because it's been undermined by false teachers. It's not so surprising that this was an issue. You know John chapter 10, you may remember that Jesus said that the person who came to the sheepfold for the sheep through him was the shepherd. But he also spoke of those who came without faith in him and described them as thieves and robbers. A significant part of the New Testament is written to address falsehoods which were affecting the church. 1 Corinthians 15, for example, is written to counter the denial of the resurrection of Christ. The issue that Jude addresses here is the denial that God's grace is meant to lead to purity, to holiness of life. There's some saying that God's grace towards sinners means that you can live this life. His grace gives the license to live in sexuality. so we can multiply. With two cents. No, it doesn't. I think briefly, I think my seller's plan, I'm trying to speak in front of them. But I think it's worth re-emphasizing that this is the other, the theme, the concern that it's on to its heart. There are people going down, saying in God's grace, we can do anything. And Jude says, no, that's not. Pattern of life that's been suggested or put forward by these false teachers amounts to a denial of the Lord Jesus. And the pattern of life, that's indicated in verse 4. And that would fit with somebody actually denying that Jesus is Lord, the Son of God. And in my experience, sometimes people who choose to drift away, to deny what God says in relation to sexual conduct, end up by denying faith. To make this point, Jude cites a series of examples which show that turning away from the Lord and his ways leads to judgment. First one is the example of Israel. Israel had been released from Egypt in the Exodus, but their hearts turning back. In the book of Numbers, verse 14, chapter 14, verse 4, we read some of them saying, let us choose a leader and go back to Egypt. And the later part of that chapter records the unbelief of that generation, apart from Caleb and Joshua, who didn't believe that God could take them into the promised land. In general, their unbelief that generation meant that none overtook them entered the lands that God had promised them. The second example refers to angels, and that would seem to refer to those mentioned at the start of Genesis chapter 6. Unusual incident, but one where the angels are not willing to stay in their own place, place that God has appointed for them, but they choose to have sexual relationships with them on earth. And the outcome of their pride and their lust is that there is judgment. You can tell us at the end of verse 6. Likewise, with the third example, that of Sodom and Gomorrah. Their attention is again drawn to sexual sin, and the wish of the sin of Sodom and Gomorrah, in regard to sexual immorality, including homosexual practice. And that then led on to lust for the angel, as it were, the other side of the counter-example. And the outcome of death too was judgment. But it's an area which had been fertile became desolate. What Jude tells us is that the false teachers are following on that destructive path. There are doubts with defiling the bodies that God has given to us. They reject the authority of Jesus and copy other authorities too, in verse 8. And they set themselves up and speak scornfully against what God has set in place. It's indicated from the end of verse 8. which is verse 10. Number of references there that perhaps we be helpful to explain, where he speaks of glorious ones, and seems to refer to the angels through whom God gave the law to Moses. The reference to the archangel Moses is based on a work which calls the Assumption of Moses, which would have been familiar to this earlier, to the readers of this, but is general to us. And even the archangel Michael didn't pronounce judgment, didn't speak in judgment on his own behalf, but said, "The devil, the Lord will be with you." First, start with verse 10, we read that his false teachers blaspheme all that they do not understand. So there's this pattern of setting themselves up and speaking against those good people and those ways that God was instituted. And now comes with that is destruction in verse 10. They're destroyed by all that they, by unreasoning animals, understand and speak to them. So the appetites which they say that have the freedom to indulge actually leads to destruction. And as it was an issue which was happening in the first century, and it's one that's happened in more recent generations too. And within the lifetime of a number of us, we've had those, and we certainly still do have those, who promote a lifestyle which promises freedom. Their sexual activity can be whatever you want it to be. But the simple message which Jude endorses, and he would tell us that we would be most foolish to accept or follow what people advocating that would say. He moves on, and the several examples continue in a similar vein. In verse 11, we have the example of Cain, of Balaam, and Korah. Cain, we remember, I expect, turned against his brother Abel. Didn't have love for him. In fact, he killed him. There's a comparison there with the false teachers. They don't love those that they're influencing. They actually want to seek to do them harm. Balaam, or knowing of anything in the book of Numbers, he was somebody that loved money. Not being obviously encouraged the people of Israel to do was to indulge in sexual immorality and idolatry. And in Numbers chapter 30, we refer to Numbers chapter 31. The result of the people was disastrous. Korah, well, he's the one that set himself up against Moses and Aaron, those whom God had appointed to lead Israel. And that's sort of the pattern of people setting themselves up, claiming error, and wanting to, or seeking to entice people into error. Something that was true there, and it's something which is happening subsequently. A friend of mine had contact with at one point. It was a group called the Children of God. They started out in, I think, up in Western America in the 1960s. Fortunately, the friend of and one of them advocated a sexually promiscuous lifestyle. Fortunately, the person that I was in contact with was perturbed by this. some hardship to do. Have to make whole things, which is effective to society, to the better society. Well, Jude says that they are no good. You see that repeated, the countryside, the number of images, not highly examples in the images, in verse 12 and 13. I think you need to say there were other beasts. The root, of course, is something which contracts to a single ship. Shepherds and people themselves doubt very, very great. Feeling blessed. Feeling also free of us. May there be no blessing above destruction to those who are influenced. Ultimately, of course, God is against them. And we find that in the case of stated in verse 14 and 15. The Jude cites a book which his readers have been familiar with, called Bar Enoch, in which there's a statement that God will come and convict those who are ungodly, and the deeds that they've committed, and the things that they've spoken against the Lord. It's a sobering and distressing picture. And it may raise an nasty question. Can things be like that? Fortunately, the answer is yes. There have been scandals, which you may know about, in the visible church, in this country and overseas. One person who's currently in prison, Andrew Peter Ball, who's a former bishop in the Church of England, and involved in taking advantage of the German. George Carey, who's Archbishop of Canterbury, has been criticised for his failure to deal with him. But one of the things he said was that he couldn't believe that the bishop would lie to him. Unfortunately, it's emerged as reasonable to him. And we too may know of scandals, but as well known, we may know of people who are probably in a similar sort of way in the visible church. And to the warn his leaders, the warn his leaders, he also warns us to be wary of those who say that it's all right to cast aside God's plans for sexual relationships, which are ruins of heterosexual marriage. I think that's especially true where there's a vested interest involved, I think, like that. I've known a legal men in the visible church who seduced them in promising marriage, and then after seducing them, they said, oh, well, I guess you need to proceed and get married to them. Particularly if I'm thinking of it, it did happen, but they both did happen on four occasions. And a number of you here, of course, you're there's something you have to learn from that by now. Be aware of this. It's not the only way for a relationship. If you risk yourself stepping out, you give it to them. Jude says that everybody who's wedded, everybody who's in falsehood in relation to that sexual relationship is not a Christian. And that, I think, is hard to say. You don't always know what's in somebody's heart. who are faithful in this thing, in error. This thing, sometimes. Some of those who seem to have done that, or they have done that, unfortunately, have had positions of responsibility, and still have positions of responsibility in the church. One of the people I alluded to, who ended up not believing in Christian faith, actually helped me come back to Christ when I was at university, and yet quickly began to sin. I'm not certain of this time. I hope he's a Christian. So I do believe he is to come back. But to say sometimes where the individual stands. But I think the key about where somebody's true standing before the Lord is whether they will be able to listen to the truth that God has revealed to them about himself, about the way that they're meant to respond to him. If they are, if they're like King David, who committed adultery, of course, and worse. But it was said, when confronted, it said, I have sinned against the Lord. And I think it would be pretty sure that their heart is in the right place, towards the right place. If they bluster and deny what God has said, I don't think we have much less reason for hope. But we can still hope, even though God may be gracious and turn people from repentance and bring them to faith in Him. Jude's message is a sobering one, but it's also a kind of one. It's our church is not faithful as it should be. In this sort of area, just praying to have influence and force to choose to. And then God grants. Those who know the Lord